My pleasure to conduct a seminar periodically with students in the area of discipleship. And I know of nothing that marks an individual as much as to see Jesus Christ in operation in the Gospels, grooming a handful of men for a worldwide enterprise. And I trust that these questions will be of value to you. Now, the greatest unresolved problem confronting missions today is the unemployment problem. There are too many drones in the divine hive. And wherever I go, whether it's across America or around the world, the screaming need is for leadership. Not only missionary leadership, but national leadership. And to me, it is inconceivable that God should call a mission into existence, that God should call a church into existence, and that that mission or church should languish for lack of leadership. We need to be careful that we do not fault God. It's very obvious that God is still in the process of dispensing gifts. We are not in the process of developing gifts. There are two areas that I'd like to penetrate. In this first hour, I would like to move into the area of some concepts related to leadership development. Speaking broadly, a philosophic type of approach. And then, secondly, I would like to deal with the area of methodology and some principles involved in training leaders. In the first area, there are two subjects I want to discuss. They represent the twofold responsibility confronted any individual who wishes to develop leadership. The first task you have is to determine that which you wish to develop. It was Aristotle who said, like archers, we shall stand a far greater chance of hitting the target if we can see it. And the first question you have to ask yourself is, do you know what you want in your leaders? Because you will achieve that for which you aim. Now, you have to hammer this out for yourself. But as far as I am concerned in developing leaders at the levels at which I am involved, I am primarily concerned about developing three things. First of all, I am interested in developing a person who is committed. That is, I am interested in the degree to which this person is involved in a personal relationship, in a total commitment to that which you are trying to accomplish in his or her life. In other words, he must have made some basic decisions. And this is very interesting, particularly in our own culture, but it also impinges upon others. Not too long ago, I had a group of men begin to bug me. They have been bugging me now for 5 years, in one way or another. But it was with respect to a group. They wanted to get a discipleship group going. Well, I said, you know, I'm extremely busy. Man, I got all kinds of commitments and involvements. Yeah, I know, but let's face it, we're important. And you should spend some time with us. Well, I appreciate that, but the question is whether I really have the time. Well, let me pray about it. So I forgot about it, to tell you the truth. Pretty soon they come back. Hey, how are you coming on that praying, Hendricks? Well, I said, to be honest with you, I forgot about it. Well, let's get with it. You promised to pray about it. Now, you can't tell us no until you told God no. That's what you told us. You know, it's always bad to get the stuff thrown back in your face. So I said, okay, I'll pray about it. So I prayed about it. I'm not sure always with the greatest of faith. And pretty soon he came back and said, by the way, has God said anything to you lately? Well, he had said something to me, but the question is whether he had said anything with respect to the particular interest that they had. Come on. We are ready to go. Well, I said, you know, really, let's shoot straight. I'm not convinced you are. In the first place, if I give myself to you, I'm going to make some tremendous demands on you. If you get in this group, you're going to have assignments. You're going to have reading. You're going to have projects. This is going to take an awful lot of time. And, you know, you guys are busy, and I don't know if you've got the time that it will demand to become involved. Oh, no, no, no. We'll take. Well, I said, you better think about it. You pray about it. And I adopted the attitude, you know, I won't call you, you call me. And sure enough, they came back. They said, okay, we've been praying about it. We've been talking about it. We're convinced. We're ready for anything you got. I said, okay, I'll see you next Tuesday morning at 5:30. 5:30? I said, yeah, I thought you said you're ready. All right, great, great. Well, 5:30, boy, they come in various stages of anesthesia. But you know, this was the beginning of one of the most significant groups I've worked with. I wish you could see these men, and I wish you could see what God is doing through these men right now in the city of Dallas. And it's a result of those Tuesday morning 5:30 sessions. And the interesting thing is we have not had one man drop out of this group. And these are professional men who have all kinds of involvements. You do what you want to do. And they finally came to grips, this is what we want to do. And I am impressed when I study the life of Christ how many times he told people to go home. When we're always telling people, come on, you know, I'll stay a little longer. Please. Don't go. He's constantly saying, you know, have you really considered the cost? Maybe you better forget about it for a while. Oh! And they're constantly coming back. This is why with students in a particular group situation or even as a department, I will not allow the student to come into the department who has not made basic commitments. Because I am going to pour my life into the student. And I want in return some initial commitment on his part. Because I have discovered you can waste an awful lot of your time working with people who somehow think you are going to perform some kind of miracles on them without their involvement. Here's the second thing I am looking for. Not only committed people, but I'm looking for competent people. And by this, I mean I'm looking for people who know something and who feel something and who are prepared to do something. Not simply individuals who have their heads packed full of a lot of facts or even principles, but people who are gripped by that which they know to the point that they are totally committed. This is visceral. This is something you've got to do. And then as a result of this, translation into action is relatively simple. The reason we have such a hard time getting people who know into experience is that we really don't have this middle link of a person who really has some personal attachment. He feels it. That's the thing that moves him. That's the thing that drives him. The third quality I am looking for a creative person. I'm weary of packaged individuals. Packaged individuals never become leaders. And by the way, this has nothing to do with intelligence necessarily, nor does it have anything to do with formal education. And I think on the mission field, often we are bypassing the most significant people because we see them through the grid of the American pattern. He must be a college graduate. He must be a person who has 142 IQ. And the plain facts of the matter are, even in terms of studies which have been done, that there are many of these individuals with the highest of creative potential, even though they've had very limited experience educationally. Now, it seems to me that if we're committed to any form of the indigenous church, we must recognize that our primary plan, our initial plan, if you please, should be our plan to leave. And if you're making a plan to leave, high on that plan is the development of the kind of leadership that will be able to respond to the needs that they are going to face when you're gone, which may be vastly different from the needs that exist right now. And if you only give them a little packaged approach, then all they can do is function within the parameters of that package. And when the package is destroyed, they are destroyed as leaders. May I add one other statement to this that I'd like you to think through? And that is, if you're developing a creative individual, my friend, make sure that you deal with those people maturely. You do not develop maturity by dealing with people immaturely. And I think all too frequently in working with nationals, we're telling them when to blow their nose and when to sit down and when to raise their arm. And the result is they are highly dependent individuals who never experience the creative potential of which they are capable. Now, you know, the first question you ask, because I get it almost every time, this is what you're looking for, right?
Right.
Are you finding it? No. In fact, I don't expect to find it. I expect to develop it. But I have to know what it is I want to develop before I will ever get it. If I don't aim for commitment, if I don't aim for competency, if I don't aim for creativity, I never get it in return. You get what you expect. So that leads me to the second part. We've said first, you've got to determine what it is you want to develop. Secondly, you develop what you have determined. And again, I'd like to give you three things to think about. How? Well, first of all, you determine this kind of individual, or develop this kind of individual, by how you enlist them. How you enlist a person will always determine how that person serves. Now, let me give you an illustration or two. There are three means common to the pastorate, and this is what is carried as the pattern to other cultures. First of all, the pulpit announcement. Beloved, next Tuesday we're going visiting. Will you please come and go visiting? Nobody showed up last week for visitation. It's very important we reach this community for Christ. Please come next Tuesday. Next Tuesday, nobody shows up but two people. The very two people you never want to send visiting. Or the adult worship service in Sunday school. You got the picture? We're singing another hymn for the latecomers to arrive. Sunday school superintendent surreptitiously steals in the back, goes down the aisle, taps a guy sitting on the end of a row, and that guy gets a sentence for life in the junior department. The moral of which is never sit on the end of a row in an adult department. You're liable to become a teacher. Or there's a third route of enlisting people, and that is somebody comes to me and says, Hendricks, man, we're so hard up in our junior high department. We've had six teachers resign in the last 5 months. The kids are climbing the sides of the walls. We've been all over this church to try to get somebody to take the junior high department. We can't find anybody, and we're so hard up, Hendricks, we finally got down to you. Would you take it? And, you know, I come out with real excitement about the possibility. But in typical fashion, I say, well, look, friend, let's face it. You know, I travel a great deal, and I don't really have very much time. Oh, that's all right. It won't take very much time. Yeah, but I really don't know very much about the Bible. That's all right. We've got a quarterly here, friend. If you can read it, you can teach it. And then a guy goes into the class and reads the quarterly, and we wonder what our problem is. You see, you expected nothing, and that's exactly what you got. May I ask you, my friend, how are you enlisting people in the country in which you serve? That enlistment program ought to be evaluated very carefully, because that will determine how those people serve. Here's a second area by which you develop your leadership. Not only by how you enlist them, but also by how you train them. Now, any reference to situations existing is purely intentional. And by the way, most of what goes on the mission field today is simply a carbon copy of what's going on in the churches in America. See, we are reproducing after our kind. It's a pretty sad kind, but we're reproducing. And this is the way the teacher training class goes. You know, we work out, come to teacher training, and they finally come, and we've got the new booklet just came from the Evangelical Teacher Training Association or the Moody Institute Bible Tute or someplace, you know, that's in the business and got some very, very, very worthwhile quality stuff. And so we bring them and get all of these profound individuals before us. And then we say, we're going to have teacher training, and will you turn in the book to page 74 today? You will notice our subject is storytelling today. So we proceed to read back to them what they've already read in the text. Stories are very important for a teacher. All great teachers told stories. Jesus told stories. And you will notice there are five parts to the stories. We get all the way to the end of reading this, and then they say, are there any questions? Who in the world would have a question? Well, come back next week for another thrilling teacher training session. Anybody seen a good story told? They wouldn't know a good one if they heard one. Anybody get right up out of the chair and get involved in the process? No. Let me give you a couple characteristics to the kind of training I think is essential. First of all, it must be realistic, just as realistic as it is in fact. I told some pastors a story of a very interesting character in our community. His name is Dr. Sharmitz. He teaches at the SMU School of Law. He is something else. This guy is the most profound teacher and trainer I have ever seen in operation. He teaches trial law, sets up the class just like the courtroom. And he makes one student a judge, and he's got the prosecution over here and the defense over here, and the rest of the guys are in the jury. Everybody's in the act. And they try the case. And he sits in the back smoking his pipe, looking up at the ceiling like this. You think he's out like a light. He hears every single thing that's going on. And the moment that thing's over, I can still see that guy tearing out of his seat and plowing down the center of that aisle and saying, good night! You don't mean to tell me you're going to try that case like that, are you? You know what I would do if a prosecution presented a case like that? This is what I'd do. All the way down to there's nothing left. Fence is sitting over here. Boy, did we ever cool that one. And all of a sudden he whips around and he said, you know what I would do with that sad defense? This is what I'd do. Till there's nothing left. You know, they're both sitting there stunned. Well, how do you win it? And I can still see him wink his eye and say, amen. You'd like to know how to win that case? Follow me. So like the Pied Piper, you can see him almost any day of the week, walking across the campus with all the students following after him. Takes them over to lawyers in. They sit around a big table, get some coffee and Coke together. He said, now, gentlemen, I'll show you how to win that case. Some time ago, I was out at the university. I said, Dr. Sharmitz, I want you to know how much I appreciate you allowing me the privilege of sending my students out here to watch this in action. Oh, he said, that's great, Hendricks. Love to have them out here, he said. We need some seminarians here to help bail us out every now and then. So I said, well, Dr. Sharmitz, what's your educational philosophy? Educational philosophy? I don't know what in the world you're talking about. He said, I just have one principle of teaching, and that is I'd rather have my students lose in here and win out there rather than win in here and lose out there. You know, that's our problem in training. We got too many winners in here, but they're losing like crazy out there. This guy has developed more trial loyal winners than any three professors in America put together. Our seminary lawyer was trained under this man. I said to him, what was your experience with Sharmitz? He said, Hendricks, anything in real life is downhill after you've had him. That's beautiful. And I think that this is exactly what we need to get. You know, where you pull them right up. I used to teach homiletics. They thought better of this now, but... And I used to get the students, you know, right up out of the chairs and give this guy an assignment. Here's an assignment for an illustration. And the guy comes up, you know, and he grabs a hold of this thing as if it's gone out the window. And he starts to give his illustration. I had a guy come up to the end. He said, good night, Prof. I forgot the punchline. He said, let me sit down. I said, no, you can't sit down. Anybody here want him to sit down? Nobody wants him to sit down. Oh, yeah. He said, I got it. And pretty soon he starts to give the rest of it. A little smile breaks out on his face, and I get up and I say, boy, friend, is that the first time you ever tried to talk to a group of people? He said, absolutely, Prof, the first time. I said, man, that's fantastic. Isn't that exciting, gentlemen? Here's a guy learning to talk by talking. And friends, you must create a context in which a person can fall flat on his face without losing face. So that when he does, you're there. You started in a controlled situation and then moved to the real life situation. The second aspect of our training is it must be continual. Well, I got a few thousand choice words on this. This really disturbs me as I move around here and elsewhere to find people who say, boy, we don't have leaders. Let's get a teacher training program or a leadership development program. And I say, what do you got in this program? Well, they say, we got 7 courses. And I say, you really think that's going to do the job? I'll tell you what it'll do. It'll paralyze your people so that they will never be able to develop into significant leaders. If you ever give anybody the idea, you take this series of courses, you read this book, you do this, and then you will become a leader, you kill the process itself. As we're going to see in a moment, the key to developing an individual is perpetuating the learning process. And that's why I want to keep this going on all the time. The moment he stops learning, he stops leading. Third thing I would add just briefly is this. This training program needs to be personal. That is, you may have your classes. You may develop many of the other standard means of helping people to grow. But I'm still sold on a man-to-man approach. But our problem is we're still enamored of numbers. I was never quite so embarrassed. It really was a very difficult thing to relate to because a group of missionaries asked me if I would come to their little missionary huddle that they had every year, and I said, man, friend, I'd be honored to come. And so I come, and I suppose there are about 7 or 8 missionaries there, and they're crawling under the table, and they're introducing me with all kinds of apologies because there are not more people here and all of the rest of it, until finally I was crawling under the table. And finally I got a man aside. I said, look, friend, don't keep apologizing for the fact that there are not many people here. I've long since given up on the number of people. Man, I talk to thousands of people in all kinds of situations. But 500 times zero is still the same thing. You got five. That's what I said to this group of men. And that's really what turned me on about them. We only got six guys in this group. But man, what guys? I'm not concerned about this individual who says, man, I want to reach this country for Jesus Christ. Great. How do you win a world for Jesus Christ? Jesus Christ knew he died for a world. And sometimes I find missionaries who feel their concern for the world is greater than Jesus Christ. But he knew how to win a world. And he knew you win a world or you win a country by building significantly into the life of a few men who become contagious and infectious and who never stop the process. Long after you're dead, long after you've been expelled from the country, these people are still multiplying because you built into their life on a personal basis. And I've often said to a missionary who asked me, Hendricks, I'd just like you to help us objectify the problem. We think we may only have 5 years left in this country. What would you do in the next 5 years if you were going to be here? I said, my friend, I would build into the life of a handful of men. I'd pour the next 5 years developing some quality leaders who were going to take over after I left. I'll never forget hearing Dr. McKinney of the Central American Mission a number of years ago at a missionary convention, the panel that followed, someone asked him, Dr. McKinney, what would be your first plan if you were now to go to another country, having developed a hospital which today is completely indigenous, doctors, nurses, nurses training school, and the rest? What would be your first plan? And I shall never forget him looking forward in that quiet way of his when he said, my first plan would be my plan to leave. Here's the third, and let me mention this and give you a few things under it. You develop a person by how you motivate him. How you enlist him will determine how he serves. How you train him will develop how he multiplies. How you motivate him will determine the longevity as well as the impact of his ministry. I keep hearing people who are constantly inviting someone to do them a favor. Don't ever ask somebody to do you a favor. Ask them to join a fellowship. What is the key when they join the fellowship? I'll tell you. The fact that you magnify their ministry. And that's a lot easier said than done. You know what the problem with most of us is? We don't know what to get excited about. We're excited about the wrong thing. Most of us are excited about what we're doing. You need to get excited about what your people are doing. And what you are doing to help them do something. I teach a course at the seminary. It's the introductory Bible course. It's essentially a course in inductive Bible study, how to study the Bible for yourself. I'm telling you, this is the most exciting course I ever teach in my life. Amazing thing is that they pay me to teach this course. Not very much, but... I said to Dr. Wolvert some time ago, you know, it's almost getting embarrassing to accept these paychecks. He said, well, we could do something to remedy that. I really ought to pay the seminary for the privilege of teaching this course. Can you imagine the exciting possibility of taking a group of men and teaching them how to get into that book for themselves so that they can go for the rest of their life not having to run back to a little file to pull out a set of notes? And when they run out of gas in the notes, they change churches. Did you ever think of the possibility of this? And you know, it happens every year. I can almost write the script for it. I had a student from Princeton come up the other day. He said, "Hey, Prof, let me show you what I found in this passage." He said, "I wonder if you've ever seen this." And he began to share that with me. Isn't that exciting? You know, he's telling me, in effect, he's telling me Martin Luther never saw that. John Calvin never saw it. He doesn't say it. He's a very polite individual. What he's really saying is, "In Hendricks, I don't think you've seen it either." And you know, I wouldn't tell him I had. I said to him, "Van, did you see that in that passage?" He said, "That's right, bro." "You mean the first time you studied it, you saw this?" I said, "Man, I know people that have been studying that passage for years that never discovered that." "Well," he said, "that's not all. Let me show you something else I found in it." Like a little kid with a fire engine. You tip your hand, my friend, if I ever drop in on your field by what you talk about. When you're telling me what you're doing, you're telling me more than you want to tell me. When you are telling me what your people are doing as a result of what you're doing, then you're really getting through to me. But you see, if you are so enamored of what you are doing, how in the world can you get excited about what somebody else is doing? And I don't need to tell you. The history books can tell you, to say nothing of those who are much more qualified than I, that we have been in some countries of the world, my friend, longer than in many sections that today have a real dynamic witness for Jesus Christ. We've been doing a lot of things there, but we really have not raised up a core of national leaders who are doing what needs to be done. An interesting experience a few years ago that will illustrate what I'm talking about. At that time, Bill Souther was educational director of the First Baptist Church in Dallas, Pastor Dr. W.A. Criswell. They have about 126 people on their full-time paid staff, so that's a parish in itself. And I invited Mr. Souther to come out to my class to talk to my students about the ministry of education in a local church, and then we open it for questions. So one of the students said, "Mr. Souther, what would you say is the secret of the phenomenal success and growth of the First Baptist Church of Dallas?" And man, as if he'd been waiting for all of his life to be asked that, he said, "No question about it, it's our pastor, Dr. W.A. Criswell, and his effective ministry of the word." Well, about 2 weeks later, I invited the pastor to come out to talk on the pastor's role in a local church. And the question period came, and you would expect it to come from students, you know, who are sitting there like this, putting it all together. And sure enough, this hand goes up, and he says, "Dr. Criswell, what would you say is the secret of the phenomenal growth of First Baptist Church?" And just like this, he said, "The ministry of my educational director, Bill Souther." And without a word of collusion, these two men got the greatest message across to those students. You know what they were telling? They were telling that this was a ministry in which one man was magnifying the contribution of another. And what you need to ask yourself, trying to develop a core of leaders, is, are you magnifying the ministry of the people you are trying to develop? You have the confidence. Therefore, if you can convey that confidence to your people, this is how they develop their confidence. Some time ago, I was invited by a group of 200 missionaries in a foreign country to talk on the subject they assigned, namely, leadership development. So I spoke for about an hour and then opened it up for some discussion. And one of the senior missionaries, you got the picture, got up and said, "Sir, I could not agree with you more. But I wouldn't have the foggiest idea about how to go in the direction of implementing what we've been discussing." And he sat out. And I mean, he precipitated quite a discussion. there are very few men of his age, experience, and usefulness who have the maturity and the security to make such a statement. And the only difference between this man and the average individual is that he has the courage to admit it. Because it is my experience that there are many of us who are ostensibly committed to a ministry of training who have never really thought through what is involved in the training process. How do you train? We were never trained to be trainers. We were trained to be talkers. And there's a vast difference between telling and training. Now, I'd like to share with you some areas and particularly encourage you to do some thinking in each of these subjects. I am not going to develop them. I not only do not have the time, I'm quite sure I do not have the expertise, and I want you to know that I do not assume at all that I am an expert in the field of missions. I'm just an enthusiast. My expertise comes in an area that's tangent to missions, and I couldn't be more sold out to a worldwide ministry, and not only equipping students for missionary work, but also seeking to provide the kind of training for missionaries that perhaps they did not get in their training program. So I want you to know the backdrop with which I share these points. The first thing we're going to have to do is overhaul our training school. Now, the thing that disturbs me most as I view training schools around the world is that almost exclusively they are carbon copies of what we have here in the United States. I have a little motto, teachers teach as they were taught. I have students at the seminary, they gripe, they complain, good night, have to take this course, this Mickey Mouse stuff. And all you do is transcribe notes and regurgitate it back. And then they graduate. And go to Philadelphia College of Bible, Moody Bible Institute, you know, some other training school. And I land on location and get talking to the students. And I say to a student, well, how's it going? Oh, man, it's sad. What's the matter? Well, all you do is transcribe notes. Well, who are your teachers? Well, for example, and then he cites my dear friend who sat in grade, who was doing exactly the same thing he complained about. Because teachers teach as they were taught. I am not convinced that we have found the pattern of theological or biblical training in America. In fact, I am more and more convinced that sometimes I'm not sure that we even know what the name of the game is. So don't take this as a pattern. This may have been sufficient for another generation. I'm not satisfied that what we're doing here in the United States in our training schools is equipping people for the kind of world in which they have to minister today. Then why perpetuate that on another country? And to me, the most exciting potential confronting you today, ladies and gentlemen, is the challenge of going around the world and establishing training schools on an altogether unique basis. Something we're not doing here, but that needs to be done. I've made a correlation, and that is I find the areas in the world in which the national church is making the greatest impact is in direct relationship to the quality of the training schools in that country. Now, the kind of person you send to this country to train must be one who can translate principles into the culture and into the action level of that country. Not a person who merely focuses on program. Not a person who took a lot of sets of notes on the American scene and then went out and tried to foist this upon the national church. Not a person who simply has a lot of content, but who has no ability in the realm of methodology, who has no development in the area of skills, who is unable to communicate that which he does know. I would say in most of the schools where I have been, there has been a paucity of training, for example, in the area of Christian education. I think this can be said almost without exception, and the few exceptions that I have encountered are the most significant ones. And what courses are given are taught by women, never taught to the pastors, and involve a program of flannel graph, paper dolls, etc. And I say that is highly lamentable. As far as I am concerned, if I were establishing a school in a foreign country, a guy would never get out of that school going into the pastorate who didn't have some exposure in the field of training. My friend of Ephesians 4 says his primary role is to equip the saints for their work of ministry. That tells me his primary task is an educational task. How in the world can he do that when he doesn't even have the foggiest idea of what's involved in the process of education, in the process of training? How I thank God for the women who have been willing to pioneer in this field. I think of Abuela Heaton in the Philippines, who, as far as I'm concerned, has made the most significant impact that you could imagine. A dear woman who, by her own confession, says, "I am looking for a man." But there was no man. So she went out and raised up a crop. And wherever I went in the Philippines, I ran into some dear person who was marked by that woman's ministry. And I could say the same thing about India with Anna Nixon. And I could say the same thing about other people that I have met. Ladies and gentlemen, let's not kid ourselves. It will not be until we get some men in our departments of Christian education who draw the water and stature, who are not in that department because they can't function anywhere else. Since they can't cut it in Bible exposition, then let them work in Christian education. They can't get the language, so put them in the CE field. This is sad. This is very sad. And this is why you don't draw any water. How refreshing then, as I saw in India, to find some of the most significant national leadership in that country committed to the Ministry of Christian Education. That's what's going to make the difference. That's what's going to bring about the change. I'm so excited about this program of the Extension Seminary and things of this type because, as far as I'm concerned, this is the kind of creative thinking we need to do on a much, much larger scale today. I was down in Brazil. One of my students launched a training school outside of São Paulo in connection with Word of Life. And I have never spent 3 weeks that I have enjoyed and in which I have been as motivated as much. I would say I average about 5 hours of sleep for 3 weeks. In fact, I came back and I dropped in bed and went out for 3 days solid. My wife thought I was really gone. I mean, to the Lord. Man. But you know, it was the most wonderful kind of exhaustion. Can you imagine a motivation of kids
who don't know any English, and I'll clue you, I don't know any Portuguese, who are willing to sit down and get one kid who knows enough English to ply me with questions by the hour, and then be willing to translate into their language while the dear kids sit there for all of this time and are hanging on the edge of the chair saying, give us more. Tell us more about what we can do. We're going out in a camping ministry. What would you suggest we do? How can we develop this type of thing creatively? And the thrilling thing, as I saw there, is that instead of having a faculty who spend the bulk of their time hiding in an office someplace, they have a group of men who every weekend are out with their students in the field, and who for a month every summer are out in the field with their students, not telling them how to do it, but doing it with them. Dr. Chafer used to make a statement years ago when I was a student at the seminary. He said, man, I believe that every theological seminary professor should be required to spend a month out of every year in a rescue mission. And I believe every rescue mission worker ought to be required to spend a month out of a year in a theological seminary. And I've often thought this would be tremendous in terms of people teaching in seminaries, in Bible training schools. You know, if you get so far removed from reality, my friend, you find that you're telling them what you used to do rather than telling them what you're doing. And this is why we are not more reproductive. Well, we could hit that a couple more times. Let's move on to a second one. By conducting workshops in local areas, you know, I read something years ago that greatly impressed me. You know, I'm from Texas, where the Johnson grass grows tall, and where Southern Baptists flourish. In 1924, there was a man by the name of Arthur Flake. You look into the record books, you will discover that on most statistical records concerning denominational groups in America in 1924, the Southern Baptists never even were included. And Arthur Flake got together a little traveling team of men who used to barnstorm. And they rode all over the South. These guys would get together and get on a bus and take off to the next town, and they'd conduct some training sessions, some workshops in this little community with this little group of believers. And then they get in a bus because they were starting another one the next morning and ride all night and get up and start the thing over again. And that little group of traveling men went all over the Southland. And what you and I know as the Southern Baptist denomination, one of the largest in the country today, is largely the product of the ministry which those men sustained by lighting fires through these little training sessions. I was down in Central America some time ago. I was so impressed as they shared with me the fact that all over these Latin American countries in the Central American area were teams of men who were going out to do exactly the same kind of thing. See, we are assuming that people are going to come to us rather than assuming our responsibility is to take it to them. They can't come to you, you go to them. You go out where they are and conduct these workshops in order to penetrate the grassroots. Again, I saw this in India with Anna Nixon and her team of individuals who were moving all over that great country, penetrating when very obviously you could not get people to come to a central location, but you could go out into different areas and conduct these training sessions. Third, by recommending and providing adequate literature. The evangelical literature overseas has done a tremendous piece of work And I'm sure you appreciate the work that Scripture Press has done with its monograph series.
Roy showed me my recent monograph in Korean. That's very impressive. It's amazing how many languages I speak now. And though I am committing myself to spend more and more of my time during my 4 months in the summer out on foreign soil, there is still a human limitation with any of us as to where you can go and the bases you can cover in amount of time. But you can certainly penetrate a great deal with literature, and you can prepare the soil and condition people for this ministry. Fourth, I want to take just a moment with this. By involving the national in the process of planning. One of the brethren shared something with me that I so much appreciated. And that is that oftentimes in talking about such things as commitment and creativity and competency and all of the rest of it, we are talking as if this is something that we can measure with accuracy. And the truth of the matter is that oftentimes that which impresses you as an effective leader does not impress the national. So you develop your little pet that you pour everything into, but the problem is he becomes simply a nationalized form of the American missionary. And there's not enough involvement of the national in all of the planning stages so that we find out from the cultural point of view what is it that constitutes creativity, let's say, in this culture, or competency in this culture. Ron Blue, who's here, remembers our consult on Central America some time ago that Scripture Press very graciously made possible and brought together a number of national leaders. Boy, as far as I'm concerned, I would bite on this any day of the week. As I said to folks in India when I left, as far as I'm concerned, I'm not interested in running all over the country necessarily. And I'm certainly not interested in missionaries who keep saying, well, let's get a meeting. Hendricks is here. You know, I've just spoken for the sixth time today, but we got another meeting coming up. What's the purpose of this? Well, you know, we have this meeting. And I need a meeting like I need a hole in the head. And I have often said to them, look, my friend, what do you clutter up my schedule with all of this kind of stuff? I don't have some ego need to run around here to talk to 500 people. You got five key national leaders that are willing to sit down with me around a table and talk about this type of thing? And that's exactly what we had down there. And Ron will tell you, some of these men were greatly marked through this experience. But the thrilling thing to me, as we would put the results of this discussion on the board, was to see the profound insights that were coming as a result of these national brethren who gave us the kind of perspective that we certainly did not have, but which we very desperately needed. And the result was, because they were so much involved in the planning, they today are the ones who are involved in the process of executing some of the decisions that were made at that meeting. Fifth, by feeding the national with more responsibility. Seems to me we are still doing too much as missionaries and we are training too little. And growth comes by shared responsibility. Now, I know what your reaction is because I get it all the time, and that is, but they're not prepared for this. Well, what are you doing to prepare them for this? It's like a child. Process of a parent is a process of taking a child from complete dependency to complete independency. That's a process. And you've got to feed it to him as the child is able to take it. Not wait till he gets to 18 and then drop it on him and say, now, buddy, it's all yours. We get the product of this, by the way, sometimes at the seminary. You should see some of the individuals they send to us. Sent one from New York some time ago, 26 years of age, had never been away from home once. Boy, was he a sick puppy when he landed there. Oh, I said, I'm homesick, I'm homesick. Well, I can appreciate that, friend. Seems to me the Lord's provided a tremendous laboratory for you to work this out. Oh.
So he came to see me, and he came to see everybody.
Finally, I was going out for a weekend. My colleague took me out to the airport. I said, look, friend, you better keep your eye on him. So help me, he's going home. Monday morning, picked me up at the airport. I stepped in the car. He went home. Mother wired him the money so he could get an airplane ticket to come home and be with her. Doesn't that just grab you? By the way, are you looking for any more missionaries? I got some of these. You want them?
This guy's now in the Army, though. And friend, he can't go home.
Do a lot of marriage counseling. It's very interesting to have a lady very piously say to me, well, I believe my husband is to be the head of the home, but he won't assume the leadership. You know, in about 5 minutes of exposure of this, guess what the problem is? First question is, lady, when's the last time you ever fed him anything that would make him the leader? Why, you can live from now to eternity with a man and say, he's not the head of the home. Of course he's not. And he never will be when you're taking it over. And you got exactly the same parallel with the missionary. I am not suggesting that you should drop the thing on them tomorrow, which we have done in some countries with great devastation, any more than I'm saying you ought to drop it on the kid at 18. This is something that has to be developed over a period of time. What I'm asking is not where are you, but in what direction are you moving? Number six, I would recommend by personal counseling. I think an awful lot of what we're talking about, my friends, is more caught than it is taught. It's picked up by the person who gets close enough to you that he feels your heartbeat. You know? He gets the disease because he's close enough to catch the contagion. And may I just give you another of my concerns? It's a concern to me to go to the mission field and find that all of my exposure is with the missionaries and never with the nationals. We have a party, and it's all up, you know, on a side with all the missionaries sitting around, and the nationals downstairs. The missionaries firing away with questions, and I feel, why don't you bring these guys in here and let me fire away with the same questions? You translate, it's all right, I don't mind, I got plenty of time. You got the time? Translate for me. How would you like the assignment of translating for me? Your old Esther Lopez down in Central America was translating for me. I gave her a couple of them, not deliberately. I just was so lost in the thing, I gave her some typical Americanisms, and she cracked up trying to figure out, how in the world do I put this in? My socks are rotted. Translate that into Spanish. See what happens to it. But you see, you know what one guy said to me when I was down there? I could tell he was hanging around. When I got through, he got me off in a corner. He couldn't speak a word of English except thank you. And he grabbed me around the neck and pulled me, hug-bared me to him and kissed me on the side of the cheek and said, thank you, thank you, thank you. You know why? Because he was in this meeting. He was firing away with the questions. He was involved with it. And man, this guy was getting a disease. He was just getting his eyes open. And that's all you're trying to do to people, is just stretch their vision so that God really moves into their light. But you can't do that over a chasm, my friends. You can't do that remaining way up here while they're down here or over there. You got to get that man-to-man contact. Seven. Buy refresher courses for your key leaders. I want to mention this in connection with a couple things. I am not only thinking now in terms of some of your key nationals who, in my judgment, need to be exposed to frequent training opportunity, but I'm also talking about the missionary. I think, my friends, we need to rethink the whole process of furlough. And if what I get as feedback from missionaries is true, we really need to rethink it. Because what we do is bring the dear guy home, you know, and tell him, now we want you here for a rest, so we stick him in a hotel for 1 week. And then we pull him out and put him on the road. So he beats the bushes for the next 11 3/4 months, whipping himself out. One guy says, man, I can hardly wait to get back to the field for a break. We send them around, you know, to people who are already quite satiated, usually fed up, put it bluntly. And I believe this is a tragic wastage of talent. I really think that the first thing I would do is bring a guy home and I would put him up in Colorado in a cabin with no telephone and no contact point for about 3 months and tell the guy, look, friend, drop dead up there for 3 months, will you? I mean, you know, when you begin to resurrect, why, go out and take a walk and, you know, get a Jeep. Well, I'll provide some money, hire a Jeep, go take up across the mountains. You know, when you begin to get a hankering to read a book again, resist it. You know, and when the cobwebs begin to disappear and your perspective returns and you begin to get that, you know, real urge, the next thing I like to do is to drop you into a seminary or into a university or into some kind of training that will be geared to meet your needs. And when you return to the field, you will return a stronger person, not only physically and mentally and spiritually, but also educationally. See, we've known for years that the key to training is to train the trainer, because he's the man that reproduces. I don't know why it is. Bugs me a little bit, and I give some of my businessmen constant fits over this. I said, you know, you guys have the most distorted perspective. He said, you're in a business, and you'll pay $500 a day to bring a guy down from some university or from some company to come down as a resource individual to expose your people to, and you won't spend $500 to send a guy to another country to minister to missionaries. That's distortion of the highest form. When I left India, Benoit, he said to me, I want you to know how much we appreciate you spending this month in India and investing your time in Scripture Press for making it possible. He said, you know, there are so many people who come to India to do our work for us. But he said, it's so encouraging to have someone who comes to help us do our work. And I think the same thing is true of missionaries. I don't find what some people tell me, and that is that this missionary is such a resistant individual. I spent a week with some missionaries in South Africa, and I'm here to tell you I've never seen a more responsive, a more creative group of individuals who were asking very penetrating, insightful questions, who were involved in the act, who really wanted to be stretched and developed. They weren't dead in the head. And I thought to myself and wrote back in my report to Scripture Press, as far as I am concerned, if I didn't do anything else over here but spend this week with those missionaries, it would have been a good investment of your bucks. Now, if that's true of you, my friend, that is also true of the national. His need is no less than yours. And what you ought to do periodically is to get them together in some little retreat type of session. Spend a couple days, you know, in some hideout where he's removed from his involvement so he can give himself to prayer and to study of the Word and to thinking. finding out how to do it, asking the kinds of questions that he really needs answers.